Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us. We are about to have a conversation here about the Red Line, about transportation in Baltimore. The Baltimore Brew has been covering this with some intensity. One of the men who wrote an article there is with us today. We also are going to look at another piece they wrote about today, which I had no idea. It was a great photograph in this Baltimore Brew piece, which we'll attach to. You can look at it, written by Mark Reuter, where they have this in really intense, fairly fast trolley system in San Francisco. We'll talk about it in a minute. They're actually using our old trolleys. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. I found that really fascinating. On the way to conversation, I'll remind you that you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAFM, Voice of the Community, celebrating 88 Days of Summer, which you can find out more about at WEAA.org during these waning days of the summer. And support for WEAA is provided by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information available at 866-4-GLASS-1. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We are joined here in studio by Jimmy Rouse, who is a member of Transit Choices, a group working towards a unified vision of transit in Baltimore. He's been working on this, been his passion for many years now, from starting from trolleys on Charles Street now to this whole city. Jimmy, good to have you in the studio with us.
Thank you.
Dr. John Bullock is with us, professor of political science at Towson University and city activist. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Mel Freeman is with us in the studio once again, executive director of the Citizens Planning and Housing Association. Mel.
Good morning, Mark.
Thank you for coming here. Gerald Neely, who wrote the piece we talked about the other day in the Baltimore Brew, is a consultant, transportation planner for Baltimore City Department of Planning from 77 to 96, and has written Baltimore Inner Space, which was named Best Urban Planning Blog of 2008 by Baltimore City Paper.
Thank you.
I want to say also that John Bullock was a transportation planner for years in Washington, D.C., yes, before he became a professor of political science here at Towson University.
Yes.
Not here at Towson, but over at Towson University. We're actually at Morgan State. And Ben Rosenberg is with us by phone. He's active in opposing the Red Line, lives in Canton, member of the Right Rail Coalition, which is a group proposing alternatives to the Red Line, an attorney, founder of chairman of Rosenberg, Martin, and Greenberg. And Ben, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark.
And you all are with us as well. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Join us at Mark Steiner, go to Twitter at Mark Steiner, or hit our Facebook pages, which I'm going to check, because I know we already have at least one or two comments on one of our Facebook pages, which I'll check. 410-319-8888. Well, this conversation was really inspired by a number of things. We've done shows in the past about it. It's been a while since we really looked at the Red Line and transportation as a whole. I was reading the Baltimore Root piece the other day that you wrote, Gerald Neely, which raised it again, and I've had numerous conversations at different points with Jimmy Rouse over the question of transportation in the city. So I thought we were way overdue, given that a lot of people use mass transit in Baltimore. We have several guests. Our last hour, Dr. Lester Spence, he takes public transit. Many of the people I know take public transit in the city. We had an intern here who's now a producer named Stephanie Amafronis, who took, when she interned at this show and she was at UMBC as a student, it took her 2 hours to get from UMBC to here by public transit, but she did it every day to work with us and then went back. 2 hours to get from UMBC to across town by public transit. So clearly there's a need here for something different. So let's talk about where we are. I know that, Mel, I know that you really do support the Red Line, and I know that John, you also have support for the Red Line with some kind of reservations around it. But let me talk to you first. Where are we with all this, Mel?
Well, we're finally at this place where after years and years of getting citizen support, engaged in, you know, routing and stations and getting the federal funding match and going up against the state to get the state to match it, that we're finally at the front door. You know, we've been trying to come up through the walkway, through the steps for years and years and years, and now we're finally there where we can actually get some real transportation for the city, and the Red Line represents that.
And there are some questions about what that front door means, right?
Yes.
This is Gerald Neely.
The premise of my article in BaltimoreBrew.com, which I hope you're all logging into right now so you can see the map that accompanies it, is that the red line would not create the comprehensive solution that we need to transit in Baltimore. And particularly, the fatal flaw with the red line is the downtown tunnel. And basically, what I tried to do in the article was salvage as much of the red line as possible, which has been in planning now for about 12, 13 years, and then the parts that will not work, which have the fatal flaws, we need to repair and we need to make it work so that the entire system can work. And it's the downtown tunnel that's really the culprit. It's only 3 miles long. It would cost almost half of what the whole system would cost. It doesn't connect to the metro at all, except through a 2-block-long pedestrian tunnel. And it's so expensive that it prevents the rest of the line from ever being built right. It requires you to cut corners in West Baltimore and all the way over to Bayview and the MARC station, two MARC stations, in order to make it come in even at the extravagant cost of $2.6 billion.
Mark, can I just follow up on that?
Well, maybe just go around the room here because I want to get some different points of view here. John Bullock.
You know, I've had support for the Red Line. I was also part of the Stationary Advisory Committee. So that was something that was a 13-month process where you had committee members from across the city, especially at those stations, potential stations, participating in that process. I think it's a great potential thing for the city in terms of, especially where I am in West Baltimore. I think some of the conversation has been different in different parts of town. I do have a little bit of a different opinion in terms of the downtown tunnel being a fatal flaw. And part of that comes from, you know, my experience growing up in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has a system of trolley cars that has been around, you know, since for the last 100 years or so. And what's very interesting is we have above-ground trolleys, but also when you go downtown, they tunnel under downtown. And part of that has to do with traffic congestion downtown and the fact that the above-ground trolleys might be a bit of a hindrance to traffic downtown. So, I mean, I do think that there is a lot that we can look at in terms of transportation solutions. I'm not opposed to other forms of transit, including streetcars, including other things. But I believe the red line could also provide impetus for economic development in some more challenged parts of the city, like West Baltimore as well. But I think also you can also have mixed use and transit-oriented development. So people are out of their cars and actually walking, having a mix of housing, transportation, shops, restaurants, and things like that. So for me, I mean, I think that there may be some concerns, but I think some of them have been ironed out.
Jimmy, and then we'll go to Ben.
So I'm coming at this in a little different direction because Transit Choices is an organization that is trying to envision what would be the best possible mass transit system for Baltimore, and then how do we get there? And the Red Line is certainly part of that discussion, but so are MARC trains, water taxis, buses and circulators, streetcars, bike share, car share. We're looking at Metro. We're looking at all possible and pedestrian. We're looking at all these modes. We have work groups examining each of these modes of transportation, trying to envision what would be best for that mode, and then how do we unify all those modes into one real mass transit system for Baltimore. We feel very strongly that Baltimore needs mass transit if it's to progress to a 21st century city. It's one of the key factors that Baltimore is lacking when you compare it to other metropolitan areas on the East Coast and around the country and certainly around the world, is a good mass transit system. An interesting statistic is College Town does a survey of outgoing college seniors in the Baltimore region, and for the last 3 years, 80% of those students have said the number one reason they would not stay in Baltimore is transportation, lack of transportation. So this is a key issue for the city going forward. If we're going to attract young people and actually bring 10,000 residents into the city, we need to be thinking of how we're going to do that, and transportation is a key element in that.
And also, I think that before we turn to Ben Rosenberg, I would point out the 10,000 residents, but not forgetting the 40% of residents in Baltimore City that don't have cars, that use nothing but our public transportation system. That's how they survive. That's how they get to work. That's how they do everything they need to do.
Absolutely.
Most people in Baltimore, a huge minority of people in Baltimore, do not have automobiles at their disposal. Ben, you were about to say what?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
I was going to actually pick up on where you were, Mark. This is an enormously costly project, $2.6 billion right now, before the first penny has been spent on construction, the largest construction project in the history of Baltimore. I think every one of us, all six of us, agree that Baltimore needs a much better transit system than it has now. But here's where the rub comes. If I gave any transit planner $2.6 billion to spend today and improve Baltimore's transit system, the last thing that they would build is the Red Line. No one in his right mind who was a transit planner would build the Red Line. And you just put your finger on it, Mark. In the east part of town, because the Red Line makes that great loop south from Bayview down to Boston Street, it will eliminate thousands and thousands of transit-dependent people on the east side who live more than five or six blocks north of the line. You're not going to get anybody who lives either in the Patterson Park area or north of Patterson Park. That's one of the major flaws in this line. And I want to echo what Jerry said. If you were going to spend $2.6 billion, why would you spend $1.5 billion of it on a parallel tunnel that doesn't connect at all with the existing metro system? You could take the metro system and take it out to Bayview for a fraction of that cost using the exact same equipment, and you would have a line that went from Bayview to downtown in less than 10 minutes. And none of that is being addressed by the current Red Line. We have an opportunity now to say, okay, let's hit the pause button and see if we can't do this job better. And that's what I think we ought to be talking about.
So we've laid out the facts. You know, folks, I want people to join us here, especially those of you out there who use public transportation, but please, any of us, join in at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on transportation in the city of Baltimore and the metro region, because we're talking about Baltimore City, but it doesn't work without a metropolitan-wide vision for transportation, because the reality is that many people want to get to jobs in Baltimore County. And people in Baltimore County, many of them work in Baltimore City. And it is a region-wide issue we're looking at here, not just Baltimore City, but the city is at the center of it. 410-319-8888. So, Mel, talk about this. I mean, this is part of the contradiction here for some people. It's the $2.6 billion on the Red Line. And there have been arguments been made by some other people at this table that we have to think of more creative ways to plan a system other than spending it on a rail that seems to have some flaws, unless you wanted to say those flaws don't exist.
Well, all the work that's been done, as Jerry called it, a fatal flaw, and he also stated that the Red Line was the fix for our transportation system. It's not. It's one of many steps that we've taken over the years, starting with the metro, going to the light rail, to, you know, eventually add components to a system that is still, you know, doesn't – we're trying to get somewhere. And if we keep taking apart every little piece that we have, we're never going to get there for a city that needs of this size that needs good transportation.
Well,
the Red Line is
not
the Red Line is not.
One second, Ben.
It's not a little piece.
Just a second, Ben.
The Red Line is just a piece. We still have many years to build out a transportation system.
The question is, before we go to Ben, you were about to say something.
Let's be honest. It costs money to have a world-class transportation system. I mean, if you're really going to try to do it well, it's going to cost some money. Now, unfortunately, we were at a juncture in around 1968, 1970, where the city could have invested in a mass transit system similar to what you have in Washington, D.C. Now, it would have been cheaper if we had done it then, but it costs more to do it now. But if you're going to do it correctly, it's going to cost some money.
So here's the question, and that money's not coming at the moment. Unless you have a change of leadership and more money going into Washington, D.C. to come back out to the communities that some people are fighting for around the country, until that happens, we're not going to have a new subway system in Baltimore City. That's going to be as massive as the subway system in Washington, D.C. or the BART system in San Francisco, in the Bay Area. It's just – or New York City or Boston. It's not going to happen. It's not happening at this moment. Mel, go ahead. What are you about to say?
Well, not at this moment, but – there will be opportunities down the road. We're not going to always be stuck in a situation where there's no transportation dollars.
So it's – well, we hope not. But
I'm very optimistic, yes.
That's good. That's good. But here's the question I have before we open the phones and read this email come in. The question I have is, do we plan a transportation system for the city of Baltimore, building it around the Red Line, using that money and then saying this is the beginning of building something larger for the future because we have to look to the future? Or is it – or is your idea, like you were saying a minute ago, Jimmy Rouse, the idea you were positing – with transit choices, is it a different model that has to be built from your perspective? But is that looking too much at the short term and not the long term? How do we balance that equation?
Well, the question I have, we met with the Metropolitan Planning Council, which all federal money comes funneled through them. And they said to us that if the Red Line gets funded, that basically all transportation dollars would go into the Red Line for the next decade. That is a problem for us. I mean, I don't know if that's a fact, but that's their perception.
It's a fact.
And for instance, we could build a streetcar up Charles Street, a streetcar across North Avenue from Coppin to Bel Air, a streetcar from North Avenue down past Hopkins Hospital to Fells Point, and build mark to mark as a streetcar, the total cost of that would be $1.1 billion. That's essentially the amount that the state alone is putting into the Red Line. So I'm asking a question. I'm not stating a point of view. The question I'm asking is, if we build the Red Line, are we going to be able to do anything else? And is it the best use of $2.6 billion? Now, you know, you get into all sorts of issues because if we turn our back on the Red Line, then we're just going to lose $900 million from the federal government. And, you know, that you can't just shift that into a streetcar system. But I actually think Jerry has some very interesting ideas where you build part of the Red Line, you make part of it a streetcar, that way you get the federal money. You still have the federal money for the Red Line. You don't spend as much on the total Red Line because part of it's a streetcar, and that enables you to do other things. Plus, to tie the whole system together. So there are a lot of thoughts out there right now. We need a rational approach. We need to sit down, and this is what we're doing on Transit Choices. We're forming a light rail committee. We're putting the whole range of opinion together in one room and seeing if we can come to a rational decision about how to proceed forward with the Red Line. If we can't, you know, You know, there's going to be a diversity of opinion which allows to exist. Then the question of funding will basically be whether the federal government is, in fact, going to fund this project, whether the state has the money to match it, because the present numbers as we see them, there's still a $600 million shortfall. Even if the federal government gives $900 million and the state puts in $1.1 billion, there's still a $600 million shortfall before the Red Line is funded.
But so the state would have to pick up, or somebody would have to pick up.
Somebody would have to pick up.
So the question I have then, Mel, I have a question. I'll let you jump in. But the question I had was going to go to Ed first, but please jump in first if you want to, Mel. It sounds, though, that your vision of, though, what I've been reading and what from Jimmy was saying, Ed, is that if you – so what – it seems almost a waste of time to truncate the system. You either build it or you don't build it.
Correct. It can be truncated, but only if you build it differently.
Mark, that's the whole point. There is a way to build this system to salvage a significant portion of the Red Line that would provide all the economic development opportunities that we need on the west side of Baltimore, and do something different for downtown and something totally different for the east side.
But my question would be, Mel, and then go over to Dr. Bullock and then go to the phones here because we have a lot of callers calling in, is what – I mean, that would seem to be that – I could see either being for the Red Line system or being against the Red Line system. The truncated piece doesn't make sense to me.
Does not make sense.
I mean, maybe it does. I'm just not seeing it. I want to, but go ahead.
Well, when Jimmy started speaking about the three trolley lines, you know, those are all great modes of transportation in the directions that he described. North Avenue, excellent. But it doesn't solve the situation that the Red Line does. The Red Line is an east-west connector. Starts at a major job center on the west side, goes to a major job center on the east side, connecting everybody in between, that connecting all the neighborhoods in between that have the most citizens without cars, that are very dependent upon bus transportation, which, as you mentioned earlier, takes a little bit of time for folks to get to work. The Red Line itself represents one other section of this transportation system. It's not the do-all, it's not the be-all, but it does get it done.
Exactly. I mean, it's something that, again, it's not perfect. I mean, in any, public project, you're not going to have 100% of people, be happy about it. But it serves a great number of people, again, an east-west, connection that currently doesn't exist. Part of, the conversation needs to be, honestly, what the real opposition is. Is it about money, or is it really about, the perception of inconvenience, the perception of what it's going to be in terms of construction? Again, there's going to be some pain involved, but again, in the long run, it's going to be a great benefit. But again, it's something that we don't have in the city, and it's not, the be-all, end-all. It's not a one-shot solution. But again, it gets us a part of the way there, a significant part of the way there.
So, can I just respond to that briefly, Mark?
Go ahead, very briefly.
$2.6 billion, the maximum federal match is not $900 million. That's a $1.7 billion requirement that is going to have to be made up by Maryland taxpayers. I'm sorry. There are lots of ways that we could do this better with the same amount of money. And just saying that this is the first piece, we're not going to get any more federal money or state money. They say the Metropolitan Planning Council says 10 years. It'll be 30 years. That's how long it's been since we had any federal money for transit in this city. Actually, 40 years since the 70s. It's not going to happen.
So, we have to take a break here. And when we come back, I want to kind of really wrestle with what you all think the vision of the future should be. I know we have Delegate Sean Turan has called in. We're going to get to your phone and call Sean. Clarence from West Baltimore has called in. And we have a comment on Facebook from Stephen that I'm going to read, 410-319-8888. And as we go to break, let's bring in Beverly Burke, who has an announcement, the Bradley Manning case. The verdict is in, not the verdict, but the sentencing is in, which we'll be covering with some intensity tomorrow on our show. But she'll tell us what the sentencing is.
And this is WEAA 88.9 FM, and the latest on the Bradley Manning sentencing. Army Private First Class Bradley Manning has been sentenced to 35 years in prison for handing over classified documents to the WikiLeaks website. He was convicted on a number of charges related to the case last month, widely considered to be the largest leak of classified information in U.S. military history. He will be credited for almost 1,300 days due to pretrial confinement. Again, Army Private First Class Bradley Manning being sentenced to 35 years in prison. Also, we are hearing breaking news, this one coming from the Washington Post, that there will be a release of Hosni Mubarak and by the courts, and that could happen later on today. And the court has ordered him freed from prison. Again, Army Private First Class Bradley Manning has been sentenced to 35 years in prison. And we'll have more reports coming up later right here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Is the Red Line the future of Baltimore transportation? Is it that? Is it more? Is it a mix of things? The beginning of our conversations here on the Mark Steiner Show, as we debate this in our community, we're going to have this just the first conversation over many we're going to have, because I think it's critical to what happens in the future of this metropolitan area. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're here with Jimmy Rouse, member of Transit Choices, Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University, who was a transportation planner in Washington, D.C. in a former life, Mel Freeman, executive director of the Citizens Planning and Housing Association, Gerald Neely, a transportation planner for Baltimore City for some 77 to 96, and who wrote the article, the Baltimore Urban Planning Blog, and wrote the latest piece in the Baltimore Brew about this issue. Ben Rosenberg, who is very active in the Opposing Red Line, who lives in Canton. Did I leave anybody out? No? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones. Delegate Tarrant, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mark, and good morning to all your guests. The one thing I haven't heard mentioned yet about the MARC train is that we have been able to give money to transportation in this past session. We gave over $1 billion. And the one thing that I personally and some of my colleagues push for is to have MARC train weekend service, which is going to be a huge shot in the arm for Baltimore City when you have weekend MARC service. That means that people who live or want to visit D.C. or want to come to Baltimore can do that on the weekends. People who are landlocked and people who might have wanted to buy a row house in Baltimore City and save a couple $100,000, they couldn't think about doing it because they didn't want to be locked in Baltimore City if they didn't have a car for the whole weekend, as well as job opportunities. Monday through Friday, you can find at the West Baltimore stop, Penn Station, hundreds of thousands of people going to federal jobs. However, if you wanted to work in a restaurant or a retail store, those jobs were not available to you as a Baltimore resident without transportation. Now with weekend MARC service, we now have opened the opportunities for people to work in some of these service jobs that are out there.
Delegate Tarrant, thanks so much. I appreciate you being part of the show always. Go ahead.
Oh, you know, Delegate Tarrant is absolutely right on. I mean, I'm one person who lives near the West Baltimore MARC station. I've used it to get when I was going to school down in the D.C. area, getting down there is very efficient. But also, it gives an opportunity for us to grow the city. Because at the end of the day, this is really about the city's growth and its economic base. And if we can, you know, get some of those folks who may want to get a comparative value in housing in Baltimore as opposed to D.C., I think that's something that we can use. And the West Baltimore station, for instance, will be the hub of this east-west connection. And so now you have the intersection between the MARC line, but then you also have the intersection of that with this east-west rail or transit line. So I think that's absolutely important and imperative to our future.
Well, there's also addition of evening and morning trains. They're, right. They're adding more trains to get back and forth to D.C. So once again, the upgrades to the MARC are, again, another step towards a much more cohesive plan for transportation in this region. And we're just working on every little bit that we can, every chance that we get.
And you can make a far better connection to MARC if you build a balanced multimodal transit system and not put all your eggs in the red line basket. You could have streetcars and the red line serving the West Baltimore MARC station. You could have the Metro serving the East Baltimore MARC station. You could have streetcars serving the East Baltimore MARC station. And then you'd also have a streetcar network serving Penn Station, Camden Station, and everything in between. The key is getting rid of the billion-dollar red line tunnel, which is weighing everything down and keeping you from building everything else that you need to build.
Before we go to Clarence, our next caller up, and also want to read Steve Rivlis has written in with a question as well. Let's talk about this for a moment. I really want to hone in on this one piece for a minute, this centerpiece that we keep talking about, this $1.2 billion, the tunnel in downtown Baltimore. That seems to be a critical sticking point between people who support the red line or support the red line in part, or people who don't support the red line at all. So, I mean, Jimmy, you want to weigh in first?
Well, from my point of view, I go back to the point of the $2.6 billion. Are all our transportation dollars going to go into the red line, or are we going to come out with more? And, I mean, we need to be planning on all these modes. The MARC train extension is great. That's part of what we're advocating for. We need an east-west system, whether it's the red line as a light rail or whether it's partly light rail and partly streetcar. I think we need to look at all those alternatives. We need to make the water taxi a commuter system. We need to have streetcars in Baltimore. We need to do all this, and we need to be thinking about all of it at one time rather than one piece at a time.
Amen.
So does that mean, though, the logic would be then you're saying that from your perspective, before we go back to the other perspective, your perspective would have to be then you don't need the downtown tunnel.
I want to ask the question. I don't have the answer right now.
Fine, that's fine. Okay, that's
fine. I have the answer.
So Transit Choices is trying to ask the questions to make us wrestle with whatever the solution is going to be.
Mark,
can I answer that?
Ben, go ahead.
If I were going to, I sound like a broken record, but no one who was spending this kind of money would do it the way the Red Line is currently planned. I haven't heard anyone on this panel, frankly, or any place else, defend the Red Line or justify the Red Line as good transit. The first thing you'd want to do is eliminate this enormous white elephant cost of that downtown tunnel. Jerry couldn't be more correct. It's not just a tunnel. It's five stations, which are the most expensive, five underground stations, which are the most expensive single components of the whole line. Once you do that, and you do a very simple solution to extending the existing metro, because there's already a three-mile-long tunnel. Actually, it's longer than 3 miles, I think.
Way longer.
Downtown. Extend that to Bayview, and you've got half of your system done using your existing trains in a much faster, much more efficient, much higher capacity system. And then you can build out the rest for so much less money. It's just mind-boggling to me that defend and can't defend this plan.
Look, I think the plan is defendable in terms of the transportation and transit. It is good transit, but we have to be honest about what the opposition is. Is the opposition really about money, or is the opposition about folks in certain neighborhoods feeling that it's inconvenience?
Whether it's inconvenience
in terms of time, in terms of planning.
I totally reject that.
Again, I think as far as all those interesting, Mark, you mentioned even in the last segment when you were talking around cities, and you mentioned even the opposition, you know, in terms of potentially at Harbor East or what have you in terms of a station. It really harkens back to even the discussion. If you go back 30 years plus to D.C. and the conversations around Metro in D.C., and there were some neighborhoods that really didn't want to have a Metro station. And one neighborhood that sticks out as a sort of really is Georgetown.
Now they regret it.
Now Georgetown regrets not having that station, right? But they fought it for a number of reasons.
Right.
You can give a number of reasons, but none of them being really direct. But now, as a consequence, years later, it's difficult to do. So when you have the time, when you have the money and you have the support for it, it's time to get a plan done rather than delay it and then wind up losing
out. I do want to get the phone call. I'll let you both return to come back. Ben and Ed can come back on this. But I may just also throw out there that, you know, when we look at the Red Line system now, talking about that, talk about Harbor Point development, Mr. Padorakis refuses to allow a stop to be built in Harbor East.
That's a big problem.
That's huge. And because what? We don't want a certain element to come to Harbor East?
No, that's not it.
That is what it is. Don't give me a break.
It isn't.
That is what it is.
You can put a surface station in the heart of Harbor East that would fit in with this elegant urban fabric which Mr. Padorakis and Mr. Beatty have developed in Harbor East. And you could do another station at Central Avenue, which you could actually make it closer to Harbor Point. You could put it on Alisana instead of Fleet Street, which one block makes a world of difference in serving an isolated peninsula like Harbor Point. You can have more stations along a surface line. The University of Maryland on the west side of downtown has been totally screwed by the Red Line in the elimination of the station at Green Street and the elimination of the station at Martin Luther King Boulevard and Lexington Street. The only station they have is over on Fremont Avenue on the wrong side of Martin Luther King Boulevard. All of these things are a result of the bad tunnel that is going to cost $1 billion for the Red Line.
Now, do you want to go to the phones here? Unless anybody wants to come back, I'm going to go right to the phones. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We had one on Facebook here. Actually, wrote in, when does this weekend mark service start? The question was. It said it would start a few months ago. That was a few months ago. What's a few months really mean?
I think it'll be announced at the governor's press conference in a couple of weeks.
That it's actually going to start.
That's what I've been told.
I won't hold my breath. We'll see what happens. I hope you're right. I hope that's correct.
It's my optimistic view.
You say that way. This is good now. But I'd love to see it. I mean, because, you know, I'm one of those folks who would take the MARC train back to D.C. on the weekends.
It's definitely got to happen.
It has to happen. 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. I'd like to ask a question. When the Red Line is finished, what will be built around these certain stops going through, I think he said east-west, going around the certain stops. Will there be anything built to complement this or increase the quality of people's lives by, like, a supermarket or stores around where you don't have to jump on two buses or three buses just to get to a supermarket and then get on the red line to do things of that nature? And also, will I see when it's completed, like when you get on, when you come up from Howard Street? Howard Street looks like a dead zone right now, and it has been ever since the train started going up there.
You answered your own question right there.
That's incorrect. That's incorrect.
Well, let him finish his thought. You can both come back. Go ahead. Finish your thought, Clarence.
And then you run into pocket little gardens along the way. That's what I don't want to see, because people that drive downtown now, they avoid Howard Street like it's the plague. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you so much. Both of you respond.
I think he answered his own question. Howard Street demonstrates what happens when you build the wrong transit, and the Red Line would be even more wrong than the Central Light Rail Line was. And it's not just Howard Street. Westport is another example of a grand transit-oriented development plan that went totally to pieces because we have not built our transit system in a comprehensive, coordinated way, which actually encourages transit-oriented development. Then it goes on. State Center is a third example. Owings Mills, the Rouse Company, it didn't work. I could go on and on.
Howard Street demonstrates what happens when a big retailer decides that they no longer want to do business in that manner. All the large department stores that were along Howard Street decided that they were going to go somewhere else, to the county for sprawl. Yeah, of course it's ancient history, because that's why Howard Street is the way it is. Howard Street did not die because of transportation. Howard Street died because the businesses left Howard Street before then.
It hasn't been reborn because of transportation.
Well, that's not the reason why it is now, though. You've reached out to a different point.
Let me answer the gentleman's question in this way. We know what the MTA plans for Canton because they have announced it. What they're going to build is a huge park and ride parking lot in Canton. That's what the economic development is going to be.
Same thing at the West Baltimore MARC station.
What's wrong with keeping cars off the road?
No one is.
What's wrong with keeping cars off the road?
It's fine. It's just not transit oriented development.
Baltimore. We're
keeps cars
all
off the road.
In favor of the Red Line in West Baltimore. I want to say one thing, though, and I think it was Professor Bullock. I absolutely, categorically reject the notion that the opposition to this is based on the fact that some elements may come into certain neighborhoods in Baltimore. Where I live is an incredibly diverse neighborhood. That's the reason why I like it. I've been involved in this for 6 years, and I have never in any meeting, any discussion, heard that kind of thing. And I categorically reject it.
Let me just say in defense of what Bullock was saying, not to jump in, that since I'm being the moderator, but I have been moderating these discussions for the last 20 years on this radio program and more. And I will categorically say the reason Ruxton doesn't have a stop is because they didn't want black folks stopping in Ruxton. And I said it before. I've been attacked by folks in Ruxton for saying it. I'll say it again. That's why there's no stop in Ruxton.
There's no question about that, Mark, but we're not talking about Ruxton here. We're talking about East Baltimore and where the line ought to go.
But even to take us up further, and this is John Bullock, and what I said before was that some people in parts of the city talked about the inconvenience, right? There's going to be this gaping hole. It's going to take 2 years for it to be done. That's an inconvenience that people will need to deal with. Okay, I mean, it's a city, and in terms of getting projects done, there are times of inconvenience. But if you go through the inconvenience now, there's a long-term benefit and payoff for a comprehensive transportation system.
And that's part of where the debate is. And let me come back. Let me just read some listeners writing and calling in. Somebody who knows who's not a guest on the show, Art Cohen, wrote in to say that even though it serves transit-dependent people in West Baltimore, the Red Line, as planned, would bypass thousands of transit-dependent persons in East and Southeast Baltimore, which I think Ed Neely raised earlier in the program. I'm sorry, Ben. No, you did. That's right. You did, Ben. I apologize. This does not deserve $2.6 billion. Let's go to a caller, 410-319-8888. Floyd in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Floyd.
It's a pleasure to talk with you. But you just made the point. Yeah, and nobody wants to touch on it. That's exactly the fact. nobody in these neighborhoods, and I hate to use the word of racist, but that's what's going on. And because I use public transportation daily, I'm wondering, do any of the people that's doing this plan ever catch public transportation, or are these the people that get in their cars and drive through, then go to the office, look at some blueprints and papers, stand out for a few minutes, looking out, you know, and trying to figure out what's going on? The people that actually use the transportation would like to, not where the other gentleman mentioned at Fremont Avenue, but closer downtown where University of Maryland Biopark and the schools are located. Thanks, Mark, for allowing me to comment.
Thank you so much.
Very good.
So, and let me read another piece came in. Steve wrote in on Facebook. I hope we explore why something as simple, quote unquote, as extending the circulator up Charles Street to Hopkins / BMA has to take a year or longer if it happens at all. The official response has been the city wants to wait until after the Charles Street reconstruction is done. Yet if implemented now, the circulator would help reduce traffic and congestion caused by construction. We need to be audacious in our thinking and creative in our approach to make BMOR a world-class mid-sized city. So writes in Steve Rivlis. 410-31. Go ahead, Mel Freeman.
It's great to be audacious. And the gentleman that mentioned earlier about he wanted to know, you know, are there going to be grocery stores and things built around some of the other new stops? And the opportunity that we're going to have with the Red Line is we are going to have some new stations. We are going to have some opportunities where the retailers who have chosen other cities instead of Baltimore will now look at Baltimore and go, okay, there's a transit stop there, there's bodies there, there's rooftops there, there's people with money. I think I am ready to invest my money in Baltimore. We need some transit-oriented development sites. And with basic cars, they're not going to look at us. We're going to keep on going.
And we know that property values increase also in closer proximity to metro stations. And then even in terms of, like, for instance, the West Baltimore Mark Station, I know that there is a parking lot expansion now. Part of that has to do with people coming into the neighborhood to take the MARC train, which has free parking. At least in West Baltimore, I shouldn't advertise that. But people parking in the neighborhood. But, as you know, in the long term, part of it has to do with, you know, mixed use, you know, shops, restaurants, you know, that would also feed economic development and provide opportunities for people who live in those neighborhoods to be able to have a sit-down restaurant, to be able to have businesses that they can walk into and take the
Ed, go ahead, then I have two questions quickly.
The MTA wants to build the west portion of the Red Line as cheaply as they possibly can because of all the money they have to spend on the downtown tunnel. Therefore, they're leaving the highway to nowhere intact, and they're putting the Red Line in the median strip. At the West Baltimore MARC station, they're only going to put half a Red Line station along Franklin Street where the commuter rail station is, and then the other half's going to be down on Mulberry Street. If they spend a little bit more money, they could do it right and downsize the highway to nowhere, create a much more attractive environment for redevelopment. But they don't want to do that.
Well, why not get rid of the highway to nowhere completely and just make that the rail and make that the rail itself?
I think the best alternative is to downsize the highway to nowhere. Instead of being 300 feet wide.
We don't need it, period.
Instead of being 300 feet wide, it ought to be 40 feet wide. You ought to put all the traffic onto the – pin it up against the retaining wall so that Franklin and Mulberry Streets themselves – can be redeveloped as well and not dump all the traffic on Franklin and Mulberry Street.
Mark,
that's the ideal.
Before we go on time, I need to ask this question. So
but it costs a little bit more money that the MTA doesn't want to spend.
Floyd asked this question. I want to push Floyd's question here. Floyd asked the question, how many people involved in any of the planning going on in anybody's organization involves people that actually use public transportation now in Baltimore City to think and talk about what they need for the city?
Mark, I can answer that in one sense. We have, at least at most of the meetings I've been, the Transit Riders Council has been very, very active in those meetings. Some of you may know Mr. Ed Cohen. He is a tremendous advocate for transit riders, and I don't want to speak for him, but I know that Ed has said time after time after time, this doesn't help transit on the east side of Baltimore.
No, but what I'm saying is more specifically. What I'm saying more specifically is the vast majority of people who use public transportation in Baltimore City today are working class African American people going to and from work and to and from school.
Well, not just African Americans.
I said the majority of people using public transportation, if you take buses in the city, the majority of people using public transportation in Baltimore City are working class African American people either going to work, going to school, going to physicians, whatever that is, back and forth. How many people represent those communities and those people are on the committees figuring out what to do with transit, was the question Floyd was asking.
I think there are. But I think
I don't think there are very many, no.
I think the real question is, does the red line, and this is what this
no,
is.
No, no, no. I want to answer the question I just asked.
Oh,
I'm not
no,
about the. I'm asking
look,
the question.
Don, for example, Don Sherrod has been every Citizens Advisory Council meeting I've been to. Don Sherrod, who is from the Rognell Heights area, has been extremely active.
Okay.
The Citizens Advisory Council itself is predominantly African American. So the question is still a question I'm asking.
I was asking Mel Freeman. You were looking at me when I was asking the question. How many people from those communities are actually involved in the planning of what's going on?
Well, in the planning of what's going on.
Or in the discussions about how it should happen.
Well, most of the planning has been going on behind locked doors.
That's part of the problem.
The planning for the red line early on had a lot of participation from the citizens all across the line. So the question is, are they in place right now? No. They've all stepped back and they're ready to, you know, wait for their line to be put in. But when this line was being planned and engaged and people were there, yes, tons and tons of families along the red line, African-American families who work every day, have been engaged in this plan.
Right. I mean, I was one of the people who was also on the station area advisory committee, and there were several in our neighborhood. And then looking at those who were involved, there were a good portion who were transit riders. And what was very interesting in those conversations was the question around how does this connect to different bus routes? And that was one of the pieces that we're
right.
able to get in there and trying to make sure that these connections would actually dovetail with some of the bus routes as well.
So
the reason that the poor and the black are the only people that ride mass transit in Baltimore is because the mass transit is so poor. So they're the ones that are forced to ride it. So if we engage in planning a unified and better mass transit system, yes, we need to include all the voices in that discussion.
And might I add, Jimmy, if you were planning for that purpose, why would you plan a line that excludes an enormous African-American and Hispanic population in East Baltimore to plan a line that actually bypasses them?
So,
for the life of me, I don't understand that.
And hugs
I've
not the water.
Ever heard anybody justify that.
And I think that it does I think that the question of who does this planning and who's on these committees is a critical question. Because, I mean, we want transportation for everybody in the city, but right now we don't know who public transportation is in the city, uses it. And I think those voices are very rarely heard, which is what Floyd was trying to say when he made his call here to a show a moment ago. And I think that – but this is the beginning of this topic on the show. I think that we really have to wrestle with this. We want to do more of this in the show because the question is, how do we want to spend this money? Do we want to build a truncated part of the red line? And then build something around it? Do we need the entire red line? What happens to the stops that were left out at the University of Maryland? What happens to the lessening the number of cars? Am I right about that on the red line because of the money? And we can't afford to put enough cars on? Does all that make sense? What about the University of Maryland? Is it only about Hopkins? I mean, so there are a lot of questions here when it comes to anchoring this new system. And I think the stuff you've been raising, there was a great piece in the Baltimore Rue as we close this out, that Mark Reuter wrote today, and I've really enjoyed it. The title of it was, What's Our Streetcar Doing in San Francisco, Riding on a Transit System That Works? He writes about the transit system in San Francisco, which is built around our old trolleys, and many of the trolley cars used in San Francisco were first commissioned here in Baltimore, refurbished and used in San Francisco to travel people at a faster pace around San Francisco and the Bay Area that connects to the BART and their system. I think Baltimore could take some lessons from other cities.
Mm-hmm. Mark, you and I are old enough to remember the yellow BTC streetcars.
I used to take it as a kid.
On up Liberty Heights Avenue.
That's
and
right.
Down Liberty Heights Avenue.
Right. You could take it from Dundalk to Woodlawn, all through downtown, everywhere in the metro area.
400 miles of streetcars in Baltimore
right.
in the early 50s.
Right.
And I this is a pay on to one, it's somebody who we like to dislike a lot, but who I can be very fond of in his later years, Wally Olinsky, before he passed away. When he was president of city council, that's one of the things he used to talk about. Bring back the streetcar. Let's revamp that system for the city of Baltimore. He was right in the early 70s. We wouldn't be talking about this today if we listened to Wally Olinsky. I think you're saying no, Mel?
No, I'm saying yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Very good.
And I think that's just a point that I think a lot of us would agree with, that, you know, I'm not opposed to streetcars, and I'm for the red line. I just don't want one to interfere with the other. And I think we should be open to different forms of transit. It could all work.
They need to work together. They will not interfere with each other. They will work together if we do it right.
Professor, will you answer this one question?
He can't, because we're out of time. I'd love to answer. But I'll tell you what we'll do.
Okay.
Sometime within the next month, Stephanie's listening to me, so she'll keep me to my word. And sometime next month, we will reconvene a panel here for a longer session, an hour and a half, bring some other people into this conversation as well, and continue our conversation alive about the future of transportation in Baltimore and where it should go. So that's our commitment here, to keep this conversation alive in our community. I want to thank Ben Rosenberg, Jerry Neely, Mel Freeman, Dr. John Bullock, Jimmy Rouse for being here today.
Thanks for having this discussion on the air.
And we'll have more. Thank you all for calling in and writing in and bringing your really interesting ideas to the airwaves. On the way out of here, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you and to this community. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner. Again, mecu.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Daniel Dupree and Sinead Hawkins, who's working today. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can go to steinershow.org to podcast the show and also find information about our guests, the articles we've referred to, and the work that they are doing. It will all be linked to there. You can also listen and download to all of our podcasts on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.